It'll start to eventually turn into one a month, but play it safe. It's like one a month, one every 2 months. Yeah, because I write the books, and I have 4 books rotating right now. So like while one issue's getting, I don't launch the Kickstarters until the issues are done. So I have to constantly keep like taking the money from here, paying for this one, and then just kind of feeding it out. So I always have while one's running, 3 other ones are getting made. And then it just keeps rotating that way. At least until it'll go now, until I can get a big enough following that I can kind of start running more than I can kind of pay ahead a little bit more. Because I don't like having the artists work for me and not get paid. And then I run a Kickstarter, and then they're like, and then all of a sudden I didn't make enough money, and they're like, well, where's our money? And I'm like, yeah, I'd rather make sure they get their money before.
Hey, comic creators, artists, writers, world builders, this is your call to action. Here at Talking Comics, we love diving into the stories behind the story. Whether you're just starting out or you've been in the game for years, we want to hear your journey, your creative process, and what fuels your imagination. So, ready to talk comics with us? Message us or hit the link in our bio and be a guest on Talking Comics.
Welcome to Talking Comics. We got Dave Franchini. Did I say that right? Franchini?
Franchini, yeah, you got it.
Yeah, perfect. You're in the Philly area. You are pumping out some comic books, I've seen. I got to read one of them, the first issue of the Groundhog one, which makes a lot of sense that you're in Pennsylvania and you write about groundhogs. But for those that don't know, you know, Punxsutawney, what is it called?
Punxsutawney, yeah.
Punxsutawney,
That town may or may not, well, I mean, it definitely makes an appearance in that book. Can't write a book about groundhogs and not include Punxsutawney, PA.
Right. I know my daughter, my oldest daughter, she went there with my mom and a friend of hers. They went and saw the groundhog there one time. I've yet to go there, but I used to live in upstate New York, so I wasn't too far. I'll have to add it to my list next year.
I haven't even been there yet. I'm assuming eventually as I write this comic book and it gets weirder that I'm going to get banned from the town. So I'm going to try to get there before they ban me.
No, yeah, you got to get over there, and maybe they'll sell the book.
I don't think so. They're very like, I don't know. What I've read about it is that they're very like protective of like Punxsutawney Phil and all that stuff. So the book doesn't have anything to do with Punxsutawney Phil, and it doesn't have anything to do with their stuff. I've kind of made up my own version of Groundhog's Day, like the reason why people celebrate it and all this crazy stuff. So like, but it also like, it might hint at some of their stuff, and it might make them sound insane.
Well, tell us about yourself first before we jump into all your comic stuff.
Oh, no, cool. So my name is Dave Franchini. I've been working in comics almost 17 years. I was at Zenoscope Entertainment. I don't know if you ever heard of them. They do like Grim Fairy Tales, Wonderland, Bell. So I started out there as an intern back in 2009. And I worked my way up from intern to sales and marketing, a little bit of everything, and then editing, and then ran editing for them, and then I became their publisher. So like I kind of just worked my way all the way up from intern to publisher there. Went from running their sales for about 6 years and then running their publishing wing for about a decade. And I left in February this year. And because I just kind of wanted to start my own thing, I kind of hit the top of where I could go there, and I kind of wanted to just experience like a new challenge, which is super challenging to kind of do it all yourself and pay for it all yourself and beg people to help you pay for it. But I mean, it's a new experience. But I mean, it's been pretty cool, been pretty crazy, been pretty non-existing of sleep, but
non-existing. Yeah, I understand that one. Anytime you start your own thing, there's no sleep involved. It's I catch myself, you know, working hour, you know, late into the evening, early mornings, you know, editing, learning something with the podcast.
Clocks don't exist anymore. Time doesn't exist. I only know it's like Saturday when I come downstairs and my girlfriend's down there watching TV. Either she's messed up the day and she's not going to work, or it's Saturday. And because I'm so thrown off. Every day is just like, every day is a work day. I mean, like I'm not going crazy on all the Saturday and Sundays, but sometimes you're just like, all right, I worked from 9 to 7, and then I'm like, all right, let's eat dinner. let's hang out, watch TV, and then she'll go to bed at like 10 o'clock, 10:30, and then I'll either slide a nap in from like 10:30 to 11, or I'll just start working from like 10:30 to like 2 or 3, just to kind of keep it going.
Yeah, because we were talking before I hit record. You're doing about a Kickstarter every other month right now.
Yeah, and hopefully speeding up if I can get more followers, more people addicted to the books. I mean, that's what I found the hardest thing is like making books isn't that hard anymore. Like I'm not saying it's not a difficult process. Like it's definitely crazy, but I've done it for so long that like I know how to do that stuff. Now it's like figuring out how to actually really market something that doesn't have a following and kind of grow that and get people to look at it, get people to want to put their money into something they've never even heard of. And they're like that's where the craziness is coming now.
What do you take away from your years at Zenoscope to help you with that? Or like, what was that process like?
I mean, everything. I've learned everything from the ground up for a publisher. Like that's the cool thing. And the crazy things, like I learned literally when I started out as an intern, I was helping out. Like they brought me on because I have a computer science degree and I needed an internship to graduate. But they're like, yeah, you have a thing where you can do like computer science stuff. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So I set up their computer network to a printer. And then that was about it. And that's all they had. So I had to make up like a 6 to 9 page paper about like all the IT stuff I did there, which was nothing. Like, so I could graduate. But then they wind up like I worked at a Philly Comic Con and I can't shut up, as you can probably tell already. And people were walking by the booth, and I was like, I can't not talk to these people. Come over here. Let me tell you about the book. All the books here. And they kind of, because of that, they kind of brought me on as sales, like to kind of help out doing sales. And then I transitioned to kind of running sales for the 6 years. So like I've kind of, and then like when I was doing internship, I was like, when I ran out of setting up a printer, I just did like shipping. I helped out in the shipping. I helped out making sales calls, whatever they needed. So I kind of learned everything from the ground up, from just shipping everything to going to conventions, getting people over to your booth, talking to people, selling the book, telling, like coming up with my own pitches for the books and the stories, because I read them and I liked them. So like it kind of just helped me evolve and grow into kind of what I need to do now to do my own business. Cause it's like,
you got to do every work. When you do your own, you're every part of that aspect.
Exactly. The only thing I don't do is I don't draw, I don't color, and I don't letter. I guess the thing is I hire an artist to draw it. I hire another artist to color it, a letterer, and a production. Basically a person that runs my production to put my books together. But everything else is like I have to do. I could probably learn some of the other stuff. I could probably learn like production. I could probably learn a little bit of the lettering stuff, but like there's just not enough time to do.
There's not enough time.
That's something that ain't happening any time in this lifetime.
Yeah, that's something I had to come to realization this year, is because I'm working on my own comic. I was so inspired by interviewing all these creators. I wrote my own comic book and I finally hired an artist, right? Because I didn't want to, if I were to draw it, it would just take years. So I was like, let me hire an artist. And I found a great one, Mike Elgier up in Connecticut. And I had him on the podcast and just loved what he did and worked out. And
How long's the first issue?
So it's going to be 20, it's going to be like 22 pages, I think, 21, 22 pages. It's basically our mascot, Panel Pete's his name. This is the cover behind me here.
Awesome.
He's a comic word bubble, lives inside a comic book, and can come out and, like, you know, help save the day. So
I like it.
And so it's a pretty cool little story. It's a little one shot. I've got ideas for other issues, but I think they'll just all be like different one shots. And the cool part about it, you know, with what he does is it can be any time period, any time, you know what I'm saying? So it's like I can write any kind of, I can have a Western if I want.
He's a Western word bubble. Right? He just shows up and he kind of, yeah, that's pretty cool. I like that.
A small town tucked inside a quiet comic shop. Something magical is waking up. Billy never felt like he belonged. A new school, a couple of bullies, and no real friends. But everything changes when he finds a forgotten comic in the dollar box. From the pages of a comic comes a tiny shape-shifting hero determined to help Billy find his confidence. He whispers encouragement, he sneaks through the halls, and he shows Billy the hero he can become. Because sometimes all it takes is one unexpected friend to help you rewrite your story. From the dollar bin to the real world, The Chronicles of Panel Pete, an all-ages fantasy one-shot adventure. A story about courage, friendship, and the magic waiting in every comic shop. Created and written by A.J. Ryman. Illustrated and co-written by Mike Algier. Are you ready for issue one?
So his origin story is going to be like a medieval type story. So, you know, I've got other ideas, but I got to get this first one out first.
That's the thing too. And it's the coolest thing in the world when you see the pages come in and you start seeing, start seeing somebody build your brain for you. And then and most of the time they're making it look better than you ever thought. You're like, crap.
100%.
Thank God you're drawing this. Thank God you're making this. And it's such an awesome, like it's like a high. It's just like that.
Oh, 100%. I got a splash page back today, you know, and it was like just the line art, right? Just the sketch up of the concept of this splash pit, two-page spread. And I'm like, this is amazing. Like, and it's only going to get better.
The only thing that gets scary is like, then you get addicted because you're like, all right, cool. Like, I want to do more. And like, that's the, I mean, it's an awesome thing to do. It's just like, then all of a sudden you're like, you're like, all right, I'm going to make like 20 more. And you're like, I haven't finished the first one. Like, you move through it. Like it's wait until you hold it in your hands. Like when you print it, when you hold it in your hands, it's like, there's no feeling. And it's like, it doesn't go away. I get that feeling every time I get a book in that I wrote and I've written.
I mean, I felt that way just getting this print in, like, this is just a print, you know,
like that's,
and then I got like, that's the alternate cover of the print. Right. And it's just getting that in has just been
because it makes it amazing. Real. It makes it like it takes your imagination and it's like, you know what, like I can do this. It's not like impossible. Mm-hmm. And it like, yeah, it's I'm with you there, man. Like it's awesome. And believe me, once you get it rolling and once you get the books in, you don't want to give it up. Like even that, like if all of a sudden my Kickstarter's just completely died on me, I'm gonna die making comic books. So I'll just have to slow down and just do it. But like, no, I'm never giving up that feeling, that excitement. Like
exactly, that's, it's, you know, go into the Kickstarters, man. It looks like how do you navigate them? How'd you build the following for that? Like, I'm sitting here struggling, and I've, you know, interviewed 10-20 other people that are struggling with it.
I'm lucky because I've been writing comic books for about like 8 to 10 years. Like when I took over to editing, I wasn't writing right away, so I kind of started building a fan base. I hope. And I built a fan base through like the books I wrote at Zenoscope. I've written over, I think I'm close to 200 comics now, and outlined probably over 300, something like that. I don't know, something crazy. But like, so like I built this following, hopefully from a lot of the, like those guys, like even one of the books I used to write for Zenoscope, like independent books, we don't sell like 50,000, 100,000 copies. You're selling like anywhere from like 3,000 to 8,000 if you're lucky. With the when Diamond existed, you were selling that. So like one book, Cinderella, it was moving like 6,000 copies every time a book came out. Like Belle, Beast Hunter was like a Beauty and the Beast mix of Batman story that I wrote that used to get like 3,000, and then Grim Fairy Tales, the main series, would get around like 5,000-6,000. It would fluctuate. So like from that, it's like it kind of I guess it kind of helped me build a readership over the years. I have like thousands of people that are friends with me on Facebook that like I definitely don't know. Like I just like saying no to people, and I'm like, all right, as long as it's not like a scam or it's gonna try to like give me a virus, I'm like, yeah, we'll be friends or whatever it is. So yeah, like it kind of does that. And then like the fans from Zenoscope kind of like a lot of the guys and girls that are there, they jumped on when I did the Kickstarter. Like we used to do these events. We do these, like they would call them VIP events, and they do them like twice a year at Zenoscope, where like you bring in their biggest fans and you get to hang out with the writers and the artists and all that stuff for like a weekend. And it's like a mini con, but it's like a very private mini con.
Private. Yeah.
And just getting to meet all those guys and like everybody there, like it was just like, you kind of just build relationships. And then a lot of those people are awesome, and they helped me help me launch this stuff. I mean, the first one was definitely a lot of family and a lot of the fans. And then as like each one goes, it's a little bit less friends and family, a little bit more fan base, which 100% should be, because I feel guilty and dirty every time like a friend gives me money and they're like, and I appreciate it more than anything, but it's like you just feel wrong. Like a weird thing. But the fan base, like from like the people I've built over the years, like a good chunk of them came with me and they're helping me kind of push it. And then I'm trying to grow, grab more of the people that used to read the books, but also too, like I've been doing a lot of conventions. Like I've been doing a lot of local conventions. So I'll go there and I can't shut up. So it's like, you walk by my booth. I'm like, hey, do you like weird comics? And then the second they stop, I'm like, come on over here, check it out. And I talk to everybody I can at a show. Cause you got to hustle. It's work as much as like, that's what drives me crazy. You go to conventions and you see people just sitting down in their, at their table on their phone and they're like, oh, this convention sucks. No one bought my book. I'm like, why would they? Like
you didn't talk to anybody.
Well, it's like, you're not like, no offense, but like you're no one to them. You're a stranger to them. You gotta introduce yourself. You gotta make them like you as much as they're going to want to like this comic book. I learned that through just years of doing conventions and stuff like that. And like, and that's it. Like, so like the more conventions I do, I might only get like 30 or 40 new emails, but it's like every email counts. Every person counts. Every person might become your biggest fan. So it's like, you got to make sure like anybody who's reading your book wants to keep reading the next one, wants to see what you're doing next. Like, yeah, it's forever work. Like that's what I tell people, I'm going to die at this desk or at a convention.
What? There you go. That's not a bad way to go.
Well, not people. It's time to go for people seeing it.
Well, right. What are you doing with the emails? Are you doing like Substack, a newsletter? What are you doing?
Yeah, so I use Substack, mostly because okay. I'm poor.
I'm at the subscribe to that. What's the name of it?
I don't even know. Let me pull it up real quick. I think it's just Weird Brain, but I don't want to slow us down.
I just started my Substack like a week ago, so.
I think it's at Weird Brain Entertainment. I said once.
Okay.
So I use that.
I'll look for it.
I follow their rules as much as I can. I don't use it as like an email list to sell people on stuff, but I try to do one post a week of just kind of like catching people up with what I'm doing. And then I started recently giving like behind the scenes on how you make a cover. Cause I did an interview a month or two ago and he was asking me a lot of questions because he wanted to get into comic books. And I'm like, I'll share that. I'm like, the more comics there are out there, the more I get to read and the more excited I get and the more inspired I get to be by seeing new comics. So I'm like, so I started like kind of like seeding in little things like, this is how you book a cover. This is where you come up with the concept. And as I go, like even like that, I showed up like script pages and then to layouts, to inks, to colors and stuff like that. So it's just like fun things like that. But then also too, like advertising the Kickstarter, advertising my website, like the web store, so I can kind of bring in some extra cash to keep paying for the books, like things right. like that. Cause like you run through Kickstarter, but also I'm running to a point where I have so many products now, like from all the different Kickstarters, that when I Kickstarter like puts me at a limit where it won't let me upload any more than a certain amount. And it'll like just give me like errors. So I'm like, well, I need to get people to go to the website just because I can't put everything up there anymore. And it's like, it's hard to convert.
Gotcha.
It's hard to convert people from the web or from the Kickstarter to the website, but that's been the slow process now.
And then you get their email list on there and can at least share the information.
Yeah.
So the artist you're using, are they ones that you met while you were at Zenoscope?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is like there's these, a lot of artists I've worked with over the years. Some I brought in the Zenoscope, some I met through while being at Zenoscope already. And I just love working with them. And that was kind of the thing. It was like I love giving, working with people I know and working and giving people that I know jobs. Cause that was always the crazy thing is like, people would be like, you guys do too many covers, or like, why do you do all these covers? I'm like, every cover we do is giving an artist a job that might not get one at Marvel, DC, or anywhere else. And I was like, and that's all it is. People don't have to buy every cover. Like, yeah, it'd be awesome if you did, but like that's impossible. But it's like, yeah. Like, so a lot of those, a lot of the cover artists, and a lot of the interior, artists I either worked with before, or even some of the new, like the colorists I've been working with. So the interior artist would be like, hey, I have a colorist friend that I want to work with on this. I'm like, 100%, let's do it. Like, you trust him, I trust him, let's go. Same thing with, like, the cover artist is the only thing that I'm trying to do new, because like, right now, a lot of my covers look similar to like a lot of the Zenoscope books, but it's also because I was booking 800 covers a year. Like I was booking 800 covers a year for Zenoscope. So it's like, and like a lot of that was like, that was my taste for most part of just like grabbing these artists in there. So it's going to be hard to kind of not do what looks like there, because like I already liked all these artists. Like a lot of like, so it's like now I'm bringing some of those artists with me, but I'm also trying to like each book, like throw in another new artist or a new, like one or two or three new cover artists or people I haven't worked with in a while or ever. And then just kind of build out a whole new stable of artists with the ones I have for Weird Band.
And you do all the writing? Okay. Write all the scripts and everything for them? Very cool.
Yeah, because I need to, or I will go crazy. Like, I mean, like I don't mind writing outlines for other people, but I mean, for now it's like writing is more for me to get like I call them the woodpeckers, like in my head, where it's like, gotcha, they're constantly just eating at me. And it's like to get it all out. It feels like I need to do that. And I went from writing like 30 books a year to writing like 8. So I need, I was writing almost 30. Like, I think it was like almost 30. It was like 26 to 32 for Zenoscope a year. So I'm like, and now I'm only doing like 8 or 9 for myself. So it's like, and I've been working with other people too. Like there's other publishers that they'll be announcing. Hopefully they announce it, but I've been writing books for them coming up to help offset my costs, but also because like I'm addicted to writing and telling stories. So like the more I get to write, the better for me.
So what's your writing process like? What are your must-haves when you sit down to write?
It's different. Each one's different. Each book is a little bit different. Like, so like for writing the outline and writing the art and stuff like that, I can listen to music, and sometimes I'm like pick a song or an album that I listen on repeat while writing that outline. And it's less about the words. It's just more about the feeling of the story. Like the book that I'm going to launch in January, it's called Frosted Up. And I got inspired from it, from this book or from this, the Sia Christmas album. So I just listened to that entirely on loop over and over again while writing the outline and the whole first issue. Like I write in a weird process. So I'll write the outline. I'll write like a full, like page or two or whatever, however long the book's going to be. If it's going to be 22 pages, 48 pages, whatever it is, I'll write that out because I can kind of know where it's like, I just from like doing it so long, you kind of can tell like how long it's going to be when you're writing it, and you kind of build out the story beats. And then I'll go through that and I'll edit that down. I'm like, okay, this doesn't fit. This doesn't work. And then again, then you take that giant page thing, that story, and then I start breaking that down by pages. So it's like, all right, page one is these two sentences. Page three is these two sentences. And then you go through again and you take those sentences and you break them into panels. So then it's just like, then you start breaking down the panels. So then a lot of times now to save time, I've been just giving the artist the scripts without the dialogue, but with dialogue, like notes inside them, kind of like, I know what I'm going to talk about here. I know what these characters are going through, but I don't have the time to sit there and write all the dialogue and keep everything moving sometimes. So like, I'll give them the art. They give me all the layouts. I get all the inks in, like I approve the layouts, the inks, the colors. And then when I have it all in, I go through and I sit there straight and I'll write all the dialogue going through it. So then I'll just kind of like, it gives [S2] Wow. [S1] Me like a flow. So it doesn't feel like I wrote like pages 1 through 10 Tuesday. And then 2 weeks later, I wrote pages 11 through whatever. I'll sit there for like 2 days and then I'll just like, not 2 days straight. Sometimes it's crazy because when I do the dialogue, I have to sit in silence because I have to talk to the crazy people in my head. Like, I mean, it's weird to say and it's stupid and it sounds like.
No, it's not. It's. Makes perfect sense to me.
You kind of got to listen to them. You talk and like right. Some of the stuff that goes in the dialogue is like from you because you're pushing a narrative. But sometimes when they're like having their banter, that's just them. It's just like the characters kind of taking a life of their own sometimes. And then you edit it later. You go in and you're like there's books I've written and I'm like, I laugh because like I put jokes in there and I'm like, either I'm egotistical, insane, or just an idiot. Cause I'm like, I forget writing it. I'm laughing. Cause I'm like, I don't even remember the joke. You're just like, oh man. That's funny.
Wow.
And like that, like, yeah, that or I have serious like brain memory issues, but I don't know. It's just more cause you get into a flow and things just kind of just start flying out. But yeah, so like that one I try to do straight through. Like my number one issues have been 48 pages. So like I've been wanting to build a lot to like build the characters, build the world, set up the story for like the next couple issues. So those ones take a little bit longer to sit there and write straight 48 pages through when you're doing the dial.
Sure. That's a, yeah, 48 pages is like a graphic novel.
Sure, and it's expensive. But like, so then I've been doing 48 pages for issue one. Issue two has been 36, but I'm going to cut them. All issue ones I'm going to keep at 48, but after that I'm going to start doing like 24 page like issues after that. Just to kind of cut cost. I was just nervous in the beginning because I'm like, I'm not coming out with these monthly, so I don't want people to lose interest or not like not be invested. So I figure if I give you enough story, you gotta remember something from it.
Right. Okay. That's a good point. Mine, yeah, like I said, I'm only doing 22 pages for this first issue. Well, splash pages are pushing it. It's like a 20-page script is what it is, really. But it's, you know, splash pages are going to push it a couple pages. And I'll throw an ad for the podcast in there, of course. You know, yeah, or other books.
Because, like, you're also writing as a one-shot, and, like, this is an individual story. Like, these ones, I'm trying to squeeze in so much that it sets it up for the five issues that it's going to run for. So it's, like,
you gotta, okay, so five-issue plan, yeah, so basically.
Like each arc is going to be, like, four to five issues. And then I have multiple arcs planned after that, but I kind of want to see where that, if I can get those first four books up to like five issues, then I have a whole nother rotation of books I want to work on too. Like I have other ones that are basically in outline or partial script form that I can't start yet. Cause I'm like, second I get people started, I have to start making sure I can afford to pay them. Yeah, cause all the pages right. come in and I'm like, so I've been working away like differently. I used to work with Zenoscope. You'd write the book, hire the artist. They would draw it for whatever the 22 days, the whatever amount of days the script is. They'd get it in. You'd print it probably like we were pretty tight on schedule. You print it within like 2 weeks of that book finishing and that getting drawn, colored, lettered. And then they would get paid 60 days from shelf date. So like they would work on something and then basically finish it and wait like 70 to 90 days to get payment. And like that's great if you're established and you have constant cash flow coming in, but like for starting out as an independent, like you have what you have starting out, and I don't have like you don't get a constant cash flow from your website or your distribution yet. You gotta kind of be like, all right, like look, I'm gonna make sure, and like also too, you want to make sure that like these guys are getting paid, but also that they don't abandon you halfway through the book because they're like, I didn't get paid. I need to take this job that's paying me. And I'm like, I completely understand that. So for a lot of these guys, for a lot of these books in the first, for at least for the first issues and like some of them start going forward, I have the artists only do like 5 pages a month. Like, so I had to, like, I started a little bit earlier to make sure that like for the hell of a job, number one, he was doing about 5 pages a month, like just for like 4 or 5 months leading up to it. So that way, by the time I got to the point where like we were getting ready to launch, like the book was pretty much done. And then, yeah, so like, and that, and it also saves me from spending, here's $8,000 of like for art and all this stuff for the book. I could pay it out incrementally and be like, all right, I only need to make like $600 or $700 this month. Right? And that it gives me smaller goals to make sure that I'm giving it to them. And all of a sudden, if I don't hit it, I can be like, hey, let's delay it a week or let's delay it a month. So that way, they can take on other work while they're not getting like screwed in the end of like, cause I'm not organized or something.
So you're paying them per month.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. That's what I'm doing. I'm doing paying my artist, you know, basically a monthly installment until it's paid off. And then he's giving me pages back, you know, in the meantime, but we should be done. We're going to wrap it up. Hopefully we'll be done in January. So awesome. That's exciting.
That is exciting, man.
So we're going to start the convention scene. We're going to go to conventions for the podcast and have the book and prints available. I'm really excited, you know, trying to get on to, you know, whatever ones we can. Right now, I think we've got one in Michigan. I live in North Carolina, so I have several here.
We'll go to Heroes. If you can get into Heroes.
Yeah, we're going to try to get into Heroes in June. Terrificon up in Connecticut, because that's where my artist lives, pretty close to there. So that'll be one that we'll do together, hopefully. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, we get Baltimore. Baltimore's a really good show for like artists. Like it's a very like artist driven show. Like I've been doing it for years. Like some of them, like I know I can't afford now, but like you, that's the thing is like the conventions can add up in money really quick.
Yeah,
and that's why you got to go there and you almost got to work. Yeah, work is harder than you did to make the book out there. That's one advice I'd say to that. You got to be aggressive at these things. Not like
that's one thing I struggled with. So I used to own a game store, so it's very similar but different, right? So it was board games, card games, that kind of thing, right? So I mean, I dealt with the distribution, the suppliers, getting your supply in, selling stuff. You know, it was funny when you said that Zenoscope did like that kind of mini VIP convention, because like the distributors I had for the gaming store did similar things, where it was like a retailer only convention. Right. So only store owners got to go, and then they'd open the warehouse and you could just go shop in the warehouse, yeah. You know, and I mean, those were the best weekends ever. I'm used to that. And I'm used to when I sold my store, I'd transition to miniature game accessories that I made and I produced, and I would go to conventions and sell. So the convention scene, I'm good. You know, I'm good with. But when now I stopped doing that, like during COVID. And then the last couple of years, I've just been itching to do something, you know, again. And this podcast kind of came about, you know, in January of this year. For my day job, I had to start a podcast. And then to learn, because that was too corporate, I had to do one on my own that I didn't have any oversight above me. I could just put stuff out and figure it out. So my daughter and I started this one. So my daughter and I do a weekly show.
That's right.
And then, you know, I have guests on now, which has been amazing. I've really loved meeting these, you know, everybody that I've interviewed, and it's been amazing. Long story to get to the point of, I had to wrap my head around going to a convention as a podcast. Like there's nothing to sell.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm going to drop $300, $400 on a booth. Like I had to wrap my head around it. Okay, it's marketing cost, right? Like subscribers is equals a sale, right? Or, you know, follows or whatever. That's what equals a sale. So then that also got me into, when I got inspired to write the comic book, I was like, okay, well, that at least gives me something to, like, you know, have at the table to make a couple bucks, maybe to pay for our lunch. So, you know, so that's still going to be interesting to me to see how that all plays out. But it is a lot of money to put in marketing, and I got to push the podcast just as much as the book.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't think about that. It's definitely a lot harder. Cause you're like, yeah, like if you're not pushing a book, you're just like, come listen to me.
Right.
And it's like, all right, what do you talk about? Well, there's a bunch of things. I'm like, okay. And it's like, well, how do you get them to stick on that?
Right. So I've been toying with that. Like, okay, what do I have to give away? Like, do I make, you know, I'm toying with little, so I'm looking at my long boxes sitting on the floor here. You know, like dividers with like the, not this logo, but I thought about making comic box dividers with panel peak just sticking out the top. Yeah. Thought about making those. You know, just weird. You know, we have different cards. Yeah, I make these card, you know, these rat cards or whatever to give away. You know, it's got the QR code on it with different episodes and stuff, but I don't know. I'm looking at something. I don't know. I just got to wrap my head around it being marketing.
Oh, you got collectible cards. People love that stuff. And
I wanted to get into that. So go into that real quick. So like I noticed on the Kickstarter and stuff, you had collectible cards, trading cards for each of your comics.
I'm addicted.
What was your idea of that?
I'm addicted to cards. I love Pokemon. I loved I never really got into Magic the Gathering, but I love baseball cards. I had Ninja Turtle cards. I had everything. And then as I got older, I stopped buying them and all that stuff. And then working at Zenoscope, I was like, we have tens of thousands of pieces of art. I was like, why aren't we making cards? I'm like, just take the art. We've already paid for it. Let's turn them into collectible cards, do like special chase cards, do cool things like that. And like, I pushed that for a while. And then finally we did it there. Like we did them as like as a company there. And like, they went crazy. And I'm like, I just wanted cards. I love collecting cards. I love the high of opening them. I haven't gotten to the point of making packs yet, but I love the feeling of just opening them up. To the point where even during COVID, me and my girlfriend would go like hiking because we couldn't do anything else. And then I started thinking the one day, I was like, I want to open up Pokemon cards again. I was like, I don't even, like, I haven't even looked at Pokemon in, like at that point, like 15 years. But I was like, I just want to open them again. And it's like, it kind of sucked me back in. I would just buy a pack of five or something like that off the internet and just take one a week right. and just open them up. I just love cards. I love cards. And I know there's a ton of other people that like enjoy that, like that addictiveness, collecting mm-hmm. like cards and art prints and comics. So I was like, well, it's natural. You got to, like, if I'm going to really get these covers done, and some people go on my Kickstarter, they don't even buy the comics. They'll come in and just buy the card sets. So I'm like, okay, that's found awesome. Fans. It's fans that are never going to read my book, but I'm like, at least they're going to appreciate the artwork, and it helps me pay for the artwork.
It's collectibles, man. Like, I've thought about it, and now I'm almost wanting, I'm thinking I have to do it now since I've seen yours. I have to do Panel P collectible cards.
No, they're affordable. They can stack up real quick. If you're getting like my stupidness of getting like nine of them at once and you're like, oh God. But like, yeah, I mean, they're awesome. And it's like, you grow a fan base. And then I use some of them like at the conventions to be like upsell. So you just kind of like, hey, like, you buy these two books, okay. I'll throw this card in for free or something like that. Kind of, it's, you got to use every tool in your tool bag. And that's, I mean, if like the art's expensive, the art's collectible and really good. So you want to, like, people are going to like it one way or another. They're either going to get it as, like, I've had one fan, he's asked me to make skateboards out of the art. And I was like, I don't make skateboards, but I'm like, I found a site. I made him three skateboards. So for now, he's the only person in the world that has one of a kind of these three skateboards.
That's so
it's
really
like,
cool.
That's where I'm at in my point of hustling, where it's like, okay, like, look, you tell me what you like. Like, if it's feasible for me to make it and you guys are okay with it, like, I'll do it. Like, it's cool for me. I mean, like, I like seeing the art and the logo on a bunch of other stuff, and it's oh, yeah. awesome. Yeah, so I mean, like, stuff like that, it just kind of naturally makes sense. Like,
have you looked into the trading, like the packs?
Yeah,
I've looked into it a couple years ago, about 5-10. Well, it's been probably more than that now. When I had my game store, we were thinking about doing something similar.
No, I mean, I might do it more when I have enough cards, because right now, like, I'm nuts, but like we've done, what is it, 5-6 Kickstarters, going on 6 Kickstarters, so I have close to 100 covers. I just want to basically, yeah, I know, I'm nuts. Well, it's because it's like alternates and things like that.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, eventually, like, I'm gonna be able to collect some of the cards or print new ones and put them in packs. I looked it up. And she was like, I'm not there yet. I got to make sure, I can't get too far ahead and be like, all right, I'm making nothing but collectible cards. It's like, no, the whole point is make comic books. The cards just kind of help get more people into it. And like, so like doing that stuff would be, it's a project within itself. As exciting as it would be, I just can't
do that. Yeah, and you probably have to have, you know, 50 to 100 pieces probably to make it viable for a...
Yeah. Well, because even the cards I print now, they're only limited to 250 to 500 copies. So like, they're super rare, because I'm never going to reprint those ones as they are now. Like, I'll reprint those covers, but like, I'll either change the border or I'll change whatever on there. So that way the people that get it through the Kickstarter, they have that set, and I'm never going to like print that set over and over again. It's always just like, that's that set. Have you ever seen these cards again?
So you'd create a whole new line if you did trading cards or like packs. Yeah. Interesting. I'm trying to think. I was looking away, but I have on my wall, I have an uncut sheet of golf trading cards.
Okay.
Framed on my wall. And I was looking, so there's 100 cards on it, but I bet you there's probably only like 24, because there's a lot of reprints, you know, and then the rarities, right? So there's probably like 24 pieces of art or pictures, I guess you'd say, for that. But yeah, I don't know. I love those things.
That was the one thing when we did our cards at Zenoscope, where I was like, let's do a sheet. I was like, let's do like, cause I was like, that's, I love this. I used to have like, when I lived in, I lived in Northeast Philly. And when I was a kid, we would go trick or treating, and on our street, I think the guy either worked for Upper Deck or Fleer. So he would give out like boxes of cards and stuff like that. But he would show us like sheets.
Wow.
And he would just give out cards when we'd come up for trick or treat. He'd throw that in there. And I think that's probably what got me addicted. Now I'm going through my memories of like, oh, that's the guy.
Yep, that's where it started. Yeah. That was back from when I had my store, because they also sold trading cards and stuff, obviously, right? So like sports cards. That was from one of those weekends, you know, it was VIP weekends you were talking about. That was one of the free gifts we got, was that uncut sheet of golf trading cards. And it's finally found a way, you know, spot on my wall. So, because my day job is in golf, so that's in my golf podcast background. Okay. If I rotate my camera, you know, 90 degrees, this corner of the room's comics, the other side of the other corner is your golf. Set up so. Like
well, it was like
it this. Is. It really, it 100% is. And then on the other side of the room, exactly. On the other side of the room, it's mostly comic stuff, because that's where my daughter sits. I have a couch over there and she sits and has her stuff. But I actually ordered some little shelves yesterday, and they came in, and I was sitting on the couch staring at this corner trying to figure out how I'm going to rearrange, because that's probably my over Christmas break project. I'm going to rearrange my background and put, because I got a bunch of prints on this stack of different things that I want to hang up. And so hopefully Batman Joker will make the cut, but we'll see. I'm probably going to get rid of the dresser over here that this stuff's on. Move this shelf over there and then have like just prints on the wall here. So we'll
see. Always the fun reorganize. I just reorganized my shipping area and it's a mess. Like I just got shelves and I was like, oh, cool. I went from not being able to fit any more books in here to fitting maybe two more shipments. I was like, I'd take it one by one. I'll figure it out. Like,
I mean, that's the craziness of Kickstarter. You got to do it all yourself, you know?
It's fun. Yeah, like even like I'm not like I have a comic room in my house, but it's like I have a desk in that room. It's a tinier room where it just has like a chair and all my comic books and all the little jewel boxes and stuff. This one,
well, that's awesome.
Spare room. It's got like a weird picture of me and my girlfriend from like one of those character things.
Right. That's something I've been struggling with is comic book storage. I'm up to like I have. Five long boxes now, and my daughter has like three long boxes over there, so it's they're adding up quick.
I'm jealous of that. I used to have like I don't know, it was like 30 long boxes, and I condensed them down to like a bunch of short boxes. I'll show you a picture of my comic room. It's like, but I gotta start selling it.
Yeah, that's where I'm at right now is I want to start selling some of like the older issues. Like ones that we have weekly pull, right? So, and that's the joy. That's what I love. This is crazy. It's kind of on topic, but one thing I struggled with in business in my whole life, not whole life, but my adult life, I've had a couple different businesses. The gaming store worked okay because you'd sell like Magic Pokemon. They'd come out with new sets, right? So that was like you had an endless supply, but it was still like once every 3 months you'd get a set. So it's still hard to get, you know, those people coming back every week. With, you know, comic books come out every Wednesday. Every Wednesday of the year, there's new comic books. So with a comic podcast, I have an endless supply of topics. Right, for the podcast. So we go get our stack, you know, 4, 5, 10 books, whatever it is, each week. And we show them off on the podcast. We read them, talk about the ones we read last week, you know, and kind of stuff for my daughter and I. And then obviously, you know, there's hopefully 100,000 creators I can have on here, you know, and even repeat ones. I don't care. I want you back, you know, when you release your next thing. So, well, I don't know. Maybe you'd be on here like every week.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the co-host at that point.
Yeah, you'd be the co-host at that point, which is fine. We'll figure it out. But that's the cool part about the comics is there's, you know, I'm not going to run out of material to talk about.
No, right? You're going to get people that wrote comic books 20 years ago and don't write them anymore. Like, like comics, and then you have artists. It's not even just writers. Yep. Then you have the artists. Right. Then you have the colors. Then you have the letters, design. There's so many, like, the industry is so tiny, but so big. Like, it's
right.
Comics, you'll never run out of topics. You'll never run out of anything unless it's just impossible. It's impossible unless all of a sudden comics just stopped, which it won't.
Right. Which we're all not addicted happen.
And we can't stop making them anyway.
Exactly. And the coolest part about it is now I'm getting to start to meet some of the people that I've been interviewing. I've been able to meet them at conventions. That's been really cool. So hopefully I'll get to run into you at a convention. What's the farthest you travel?
Too far. The furthest I've traveled was New York. I did New York Comic Con this past October. That was like, I saved up. That was my big one. Like, I was like, I need to go there. I was like, there's 200 something thousand people there. I'm like, that's where I got to go and grow. So that was the furthest I've gone now. But besides that, I was just sticking to like the Philadelphia, New Jersey, basically things that I can drive to within a day. So I'd drive there, do the convention. I'd get to the convention, do the convention from like whatever, 9:30 to 7 or 8, drive home, drive back the next day and do that. Right. Starting next year, I'm going to try to do a little bit more. I think I'm going to try to do MegaCon, things like that. I think that's like March. And then I'm going to try to branch out. It's like, comics are expensive and I don't have the money to buy hotels and
fly. I was looking at that today for Terrific Con. The hotel was $250 a night and I got to be there for 4 nights. Yeah. Like, it's a grand plus the booth fee. I'm like,
well, and plus you got to eat, plus you got gas, car wear and tear, if you're driving, car wear and
tear. Yeah, I mean, I probably will drive. It's a 15-hour drive. Yeah,
it's time.
I'm going to have my Annika will be with me, my daughter, and then I'll have to bring somebody with me to help me with her, because I'm not going to make her sit at the table, you know, all day, you know, 14 hours a day at the table.
No, it's a lot of commitment. It's a lot of commitment, but I mean, like, that's the thing, is like comics. That's why I always say to people too, they're like, they're always surprised when you're like, oh, you're telling, like, tell people how to make comics. I'm like, comics isn't easy.
No, it's not.
Even making a comic, coming with an idea, getting it, like writing it, one of the hardest parts is sitting there and writing it. But it's like, then you got to get it drawn. Then you got to get it colored. That's a whole nother battle within itself of just making sure you have reliable people. And then you got to take it, get it printed. Then you're like, you get with the bill from the printer and you're like, oh God. And then you got to, get it in. Then you got to ship it out. Then you got to take it to places. If you're not invested, if you're not in love with it, you're not going to last. So like, it doesn't matter if you tell 1,000 people how to make comic books and 500 of them make one, then only 10 of them actually like make a second one.
Right.
It's tough. It's hard. And it's like, you gotta be into it. You gotta want it. And like, it beats you down. I tell them, all my friends, they're like, oh, it's cool. You get to make comics and do your thing. I was like, dude, I wake up every day thinking I'm an idiot. Like, are you doing the right thing? And you got to talk yourself out of bed. Cause it's like, sometimes it's a little soul crushing. Cause you're like, there's so much you gotta write today, or you got to make sure that like this payment goes out, or you got to make sure that this art's going through, or you're like, all right, I'm working for someone else today. I got to make sure that stuff's getting done. Plus you got to like live your life. Try not to like atrophy as a human being and sit in your house and go crazy.
Right.
It's a lot. We're not well people in our heads.
Right. It's definitely work. You know, like, you know, if you want to build something, you got to put the work in, you know, and that's what I'm doing. Yeah. Luckily, my printer is in Michigan. A friend of mine owns a print shop up there.
Cool.
So I get to go. That'll be an awesome trip in February. I'm going to go up there, hopefully in February, go up there and see him and get it printed and, you know, actually hit the button and watch it come off the machine. Oh, the first one come off the machine. So that'll be pretty cool.
Yeah. I print in
Florida, and he'll help.
So I'll never see that. I'm not going to
do what? Oh,
yeah. I'm not going to drive down there.
Where are yours printed?
Florida. They print in Florida.
Florida.
Yeah, there's no way I'd be able to. Oh, it's like, I'm gonna come down there. Like, I lose my mind.
Yeah, that's just something cool. I thought, you know, doing it for the content, you know, so that cool.
Right, that's actually a smart idea. Like, now you say that, like, that's a good.
See, you know, something for this. You know, people need to subscribe to my Substack so I can, you know, look forward to go to these conventions.
Well, I saw your TikTok too, and that's kind of where I harassed you to, you know. Right.
You didn't harass me. You asked me like,
I harass you with kindness and like,
yeah, there you go. Hey, I saw you stumble upon your TikTok. Will you know, look at this stuff. Why don't you just be on the podcast? That I'll look at.
I appreciate it. No, I mean, that's the thing too. Like, I'm teaching myself TikTok, which I never did. I had to teach myself Instagram and all this marketing like that. Like, I mean, that's what you don't think about until you have to do it. So like, even out, like, you're already in the podcast. So like, you're learning the marketing, and now it's like you're doing the reverse, where I did the comics and learning the marketing.
Right.
You're doing the marketing and learning the comics, which is interesting.
Yeah, and that was something that always I struggled with marketing when I had my store, right, which is a lot more local, right, marketing. But, it was still a challenge, you know, to get that. And I'm still struggling now. I mean, I know it looks like, you know, people give me crap. They're like, oh, you have over 1,000 followers, you know, on TikTok. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's awesome. I'm trying to do something with that. Like, you know, I have 400 on Instagram. I was like, but, you know, 94 on YouTube or whatever. But it's like, I still am struggling to get people to like subscribe to my newsletter. You know, like I'm giving a free preview, you know, first four pages free of the comic book, you know, trying to entice people to sign up for, you know, the newsletter so I can start building that email list. Right. And I don't know. I'm still trying to figure it out.
A lot of it's like anything. You didn't start out with 1,000 TikTok subscribers. Like it's just, it's like building a house. It's just brick by brick.
Right.
It's a lot to be like, all right, look, you have 1,000. And it's like, yeah, but like you didn't see me when I had 100 or when I had whatever. And it's the same thing with the emails. It's the same thing with like, and that's what the crazy thing now is, because like you have the email list you got to grow. Then you also have to grow your TikTok. Then you have to grow your podcast. Then you have to grow your Instagram. Then you have to grow, and they're all different things. My Instagram has grown quicker than my Facebook. My TikTok has one video because I'm scared to put my face on it.
Yeah, see, that was a big one for me. And I'm still like, I'm a year ago, and I tell this almost every episode, so people are probably tired of hearing it. But like a year ago, I would have thought you were crazy if I was going to be in front of a camera and a microphone, you know, because I hated my voice. I didn't like any of that. So I've done the podcast and I'm loving it. I love being it. Like now I'm thriving. But like now I'm just trying to make like the single like TikTok videos where you just hit, you know, record and talk, and I'm still struggling with that. So it's really weird. Like I don't mind posting podcast clips, that's easy, but just another thing I gotta overcome and figure out.
I'm with you, it's the fear. I talk a lot, but I don't like to hear myself talk. It's iron,
right?
So like, I don't like to hear my own voice, so it's like, how do I record myself if I don't want to keep re-listening to my voice? And it's like, right. Also too, like nobody needs to see me. Like, it's like, I'm making the books. Look at the books. Look at the art. Like, I'm not a piece of art. Like I'm jumbled together with a bunch of food and beer. So, like, look at that. Like, but it's like, you start realizing, like, especially for you for a podcast, but, like, you have to become the face of your own brand and your own company. And it's like, that's a hard part to kind of digest. And it's like, because I'll see it too. Like, I put up pictures of my covers and on like Instagram or Facebook, and then some reason I'll get more likes on the ones where it's me at a booth. And it's like, it's more because
I will tell you, like, now that you said it, so I scrolled your Facebook group page, like I've joined it and just scrolled it. I stopped on the booth pictures quicker than I did the cover pictures.
It's crazy. I think it's just people like to see like the real world, just the image. They want to see like, oh, this is cool. It's a setup. It's like yeah, so it's very new and different. And I mean, that's the thing, is everything's an experiment.
It could be because I'm trying to figure out, you know, I'm planning my booth right now, like in my head, like I'm mentally building my booth, trying to figure out how I want to build it. So I still don't know, because there's a lot of good ones, and then there's a lot of like just okay ones, and I don't want to just an okay one. So
yeah, like I mean, like I spent years doing it with Zenoscope. I've never done one this small. So like I'm experimenting and playing with it every time. And then each time I do a convention, I have more books. So I'm like, I don't know how to fit them on this like 6 foot, 8 foot table. So you can get more creative with like, how do I do the art prints? How do you do this? Like without having to spend a ton of money on like giant banners or things like that, or buying your booth space. Because right now it's like, yeah, like you might spend $200 to $400 to $600 on a booth. And it's like, you're only going to sell $300 to $400 worth of inventory. And you're like, you lost, like you're getting marketing, but it's like, it's tough. It's a tough juggle. But I mean, the building the booth's fun. Cause like, especially too, like when you can see it and you see people come up to it and you get excited. I don't know. I love meeting people. I love talking to people.
Yeah. I've got some cool ideas. I'm going to do a live on TikTok, like in my garage, and build my booth like live on TikTok. And but I got to get some pieces in. So probably do that in January. Exactly. So yeah, everything's content, right? Like everything. So I don't know. I got to play with the lie. I got to go live more. I mean, that's what you need to do. You need to go live and advertise your books.
I know. It's tough.
It is tough. It is, like, especially as much as you're working, like, how do you fit that in, right? It's just another thing to fit in the schedule.
Sleep an extra, less an hour or whatever.
What sleep?
No, yeah, for me, it's just more nervousness. It's the nervousness of doing it, and then I'm like, I don't know. I think as I just do it, and I guess don't read the comments, because, you don't need any negativity, because it's a lot, like, you're already doing something that most people are like, how's this going to work? Is this going to work? And it's like, you kind of want to avoid any excess stuff that you create yourself.
Well, that's great advice. And that was my next question was what advice would you give somebody starting out in the creative space? You know, what advice would you give them?
You're going to have self-doubt. I don't know, unless you're like the greatest person ever. Like every book I put out, everything I put in, like, I don't know if people are going to like the cover concept. I don't know if people are going to like the story. I don't know if they're going to like the characters. I don't know if they're like, and some people aren't. And you got to just accept that. Like, it's taken me years to kind of just accept that, where I won't really read comments because I don't really get comments, but it's more like you read reviews and things like that. I'll read them all, positive, negative. And it's not necessarily to fill my ego or whatever. Like, sometimes I'd need it for a boost of like, okay, at least someone likes it. Like, there's at least one person. Right. 'Cause you write in a bubble, you create in a bubble. And you don't get to know if anybody thinks your stuff's any good, except for sales numbers or reviews or like random like comments here and there. So you got, as much as I want to avoid like any negative stuff, you got to feed on some of that stuff. So you know, you're going in the right direction. You need to it's counterintuitive. It's like, I don't want to waste my time reading all this stuff and looking at all this stuff, but I also need to know if, like, all right, did they make a valid point? Did this not make sense in the story? Did I go too fast? Was the pacing off? Was the dialogue, was the character unlikable? Like, things like that. And did I mean for them to be unlikable, or was it unlikable because I wrote them bad? Like things like that. So like, getting into this industry, you have to have a thick skin. You have to have drive, ambition, energy. When you don't have it, like it's a lot. It's not, it beats you down, but like the reward is the second you get it, you get to create and you get to make something that didn't exist before. And you get to hold your ideas in your hand, and you get to get other people to buy it or hold it and talk to you about it. Like, I really like this. Like, it's the coolest thing in the world when someone's like, your character's my favorite character. Like, or even the other day I was looking on a Reddit post, and it was in the Zenoscope Reddit thing, and these people were naming their top five characters, and I'm like, well, and out of the, like, it was only four posts, but out of the four posts, two characters I created were like in the tops, and I was like, that's awesome. Like stuff like that, where it's like, it's, I don't know, I think we're just, like, when you're creative and you're always looking for like validation, and not that you're, and not that you're crazy. So it's like, we're needy, but then you gotta somehow balance your neediness with, like, you gotta shut it off and just get stuff done. Because if you sat there all day reading happy things and bad things about you, you'll never get anything done. Like, so it's right. There's no one thing to be like, this is how you make comics, this is how you do it. It's just you have to have a passion for it. And even that I have a passion for it, most days I wake up like, you're an idiot. Why are you doing this? Like, is it working? And then you have to walk yourself through it. Like, all right, this is working. This didn't work, but it doesn't mean it's not working every day and things like that. Like, it's a lot of like self-motivation.
Self-motivation, leveling up, just put the work in, get it done.
And don't be a bad person. Like, that's the thing. Industry is small. People deserve to be treated with respect. And that goes for anybody from like the customers that maybe put their noses up at your book when they walk by the convention. They're just not your fans yet. That's it. Yeah, and then the same thing with you want to treat your artists with respect. You want to treat like every level of it, because it's like they're just living their lives like you are. So you want to make sure that like you're not. Why make someone else's day worse? I don't want to be. Right. I don't want to be the reason someone's mad for the day. Like, I don't. Like, and that kind of helps me drive me with making sure I do things based on like, is this going to help me? And will it hurt anybody else? And it's just kind of like things like that. That's why I make sure I pay people. I'm like, all right, I might have to eat peanut butter and jelly for the next 3 weeks, but this guy's paid for the work he's done.
That's awesome. Real, I want to go into the, I feel like I have to go into like the being at Zenoscope and like, what would you tell people that are trying to get published through like a publisher and, you know, what insider information would you give them?
I mean, the biggest thing is don't live on one idea. I mean, it's one, I don't know, there's a million things I could tell you. Like, so like the one thing is we would always have people that come up to the booth and they had their one idea and they would pitch it every year for 5 years straight. And you're just like, wow. And I'm like, all right, but like, what else do you have? Like, this idea doesn't work for us. It might work for someone else. Okay. You might work it out. But you got to be able to be flexible, and you got to be able to be like, all right, well, what doesn't work for this idea? Or like, okay, like, if you don't like that idea, I have this idea. Okay, like, especially if you're trying to pitch to a publisher, you want to pitch something just because you have a book and you think it's the best thing and your friends are telling you it's the best thing and your mom's telling you it's the best thing. That publisher is going to be like, well, it doesn't work here. Like, we do horror. This is about, like, candy. What do you want us to do with this? Like, just because you might think you have the best idea doesn't mean everybody else does. But also, too, especially for independent publishers, most of us are running it because we want to make our own ideas. So it's going to be even harder for you to sell us your ideas when it's like, I have my own. I don't want to spend money on yours because I'm like, I'm spending money on mine.
Is that coming from Zenoscope side? Like, is that
both?
Or
both,
like,
cause like even both? At Zenoscope, okay. we created like when it was like me, Joe, Rattler, we don't, our editorial and the owners of the company, we all created this stuff ourselves. So it wasn't like a lot of this stuff towards the end. I was outlining a bunch of things and I would hire writers in because I didn't have the time to write everything. So you would just direct this giant universe and build it. But I mean, like, that's the thing too. Like, as I expand as a publisher, I do want to bring in other people's ideas and other things that fit within the world or fit within like the framework. But that's why my company is called Weird Brain, because everything fits in there. Long as it's not like anything like I've seen a million times and things like that. But like right now, you can't afford that. You got to build a base and you got to kind of build it out. But like for people trying to get into the industry, like I always tell them, I even tell people that would bring like drop offs. Like it's easier for an artist to get into the industry than it is a writer. The artist can show you, they can do test pages. They can show you their art. You can see right away, like, okay, you can draw covers. You can draw interiors. You can tell a story. That's just step one. Step two is like actually seeing if you can hit deadlines, see if you can keep up the quality and things like that. But I mean, that's, artists are a lot easier because publishers are always looking for artists. You're always looking for artists. You might not always be looking for writers because like you might already have your stable. You might be writing it yourself, but also too, for like a writer breaking in, the best thing I tell everybody, I'm like, write a 5-page, write a 6-page, 8-page script, write a beginning, middle and end to your characters. Like, they don't have to die. They don't do whatever. You can have more stories for it, but write it where it's like, get me invested within like 5 to 6 pages and hire an artist, pay out of pocket, get them to draw it, get them to color it, get them to letter it. And then you have your portfolio. You take that to publishers because a lot of times they don't want your story. They don't want your book. Like, unless it's a publisher that's just like, all right, we're like, Image is taking in like whatever. But like, if you're trying to get into like, say like, whatever, Dark Horse or Boom or like whatever it is, like, I'm not going to say Marvel and DC because that, I think it's more, you have to kind of have more connections on top of just submitting it for writers. But it's like, at least show that you can make a script and get it drawn and show that like, all right, the artist can take your idea. And that's not what you're pitching to them. You're just showing them like, here's a sample of my work. And maybe they like it and they're like, oh, you know what? I want more of this story. But it gives you this portfolio to take around. Like, yeah, I wrote this. Because you can't just hand your scripts in to publishers, because legally we can't even look at them. Because like, say if you hand us a script and we have an idea that's similar to that, who's to say you're not like, well, you stole my idea and you guys are doing it. So at least if you draw it and you get it like made, you basically own a copyright to it, and there's more of a fight for you. Because like, say if you do hand it in, you hand the script in and they do steal your idea, but you have no proof. But at least if you had it drawn and you have like a paper trail of it, like, all right, this artist drew this, this, and this, and then all of a sudden their book looks like your book and your book was done 3 years ago, things like that. Like, it's more for your own safety. But I mean, like, most publishers don't want to look at unsolicited stuff because that you might be like, I want to do this really cool whatever, let's say Batman idea. But it's like, what if they already have that? The comics don't, like, they might have been working on that Batman idea for 6 months and you just happen to have the same idea they do. That happens all the time. Like you have an idea for a story and someone will have a similar idea. And it's like, well, that's things, or like, or the title is the same, or things like that. I mean, nobody's going to write your story, which is actually, it's fine. Like, oh, you can't be like, well, someone already wrote a guy that dresses like a bat. Like, all right, well, write your version of that. Like, write it, you know, like, write it, like, maybe like your version, the guy dresses as a bat and then he eats people's skulls. You know, like, just something like, something that makes them different, whatever it is. Like, but I mean, for writers, the hardest thing is like, you just can't hand in a script. And also too, like, it doesn't mean, I can't see that you can make a comic. So for writers, I always say, write a short script, make it count, get me invested, get me excited, and do it in short period. Oh, you can do it as longer if you want, but it's easier for me as like an editor to be like, I can read through 5 pages, or I can read through 10 pages and catch your drift right away. Where if you're like, here's my graphic novel that I wrote and nobody published it, but I did. And you're like, well, you spent all this money. I can't read this whole thing. Like right. I might be able to, and I'll read pieces of it. Like, and so like, it's tough. And also too, comics, there's no time. So you got to make sure something that's going to be quick, something that can hit. Like, and also too, like something I can read on the toilet or on the train or, you know, like something that's like very easily accessible that I don't have to sit down there and spend my Sunday or whatever it is. Right. Do something else. So for writers, it's, I'd say create your own character, story, whatever it is. Pay for an artist to do it, and then also and put the investment in, because maybe you see it, realize none of these publishers are right for your story anyway, and you're like, I already paid for this. Let me do this. Like, I encourage more independent people to make their own books, mostly because you have your control over it. And but it has its downsides. It has its downsides because a lot of people don't know what they're doing. So maybe they make a really good number one issue. People get addicted to it, and then all of a sudden, issue two never comes out because they can't afford it, or they don't have the ambition or the drive to write it again. And then I'm like, as a fan, I'm like, well, this sucks. Like I got all excited, right. And then it hurts that fan for the rest of the people in the independence community, because it's like, well, I already invested in this guy a year ago and he put out 2 issues and he hasn't come out with a new issue. Are you going to be that way? And you're like, well, no, but like, I can't believe you. Like, you only have 4 issues.
Right.
So it's a weird thing.
I think that's why I'm doing a one shot. To start with, right? Like, if I do no other book, this book can live on its own. Like, I want to do more, right? But if I do them, you know, the one thing I'm doing is before, like, I am going to try to do a Kickstarter for it. Like, I have a pre-launch page up, you know, and it's very low, you know, like $500 goal, just to have it out there, just because I want us to see, like, just more. I'm gonna have it done before I hit launch.
That's
like, I'm gonna have copies in my hand, you know, I'm gonna have a box on my floor full of them, you know, and I'll hit go, and then, you know, because it can live on its own. I'd love to do another one, but it'll be the same thing. Even if it's a 3 or 4 book miniseries, I'd probably finish the whole thing before I ever hit go, you know, just to have.
Yeah, I mean, that's the smart thing to do. Like, I don't print them before I do the Kickstarter, but I have them done and ready to print. So, like, basically, the Kickstarter pays for my printing. It doesn't pay me back for the art yet. Like, that's what I do, the conventions, and I do the website, and I push for, and then you resell them. But, like, yeah, like, you kind of, yeah, like, I one shot, especially for, like, a brand new, like, writer that's never jumped in, it's probably your best, because, like, you can get your idea out, you can show it, and you can sell it. Nobody has to read any other one of them. Nobody has to be let down. You're like, you know what? There's another one coming out. And they're like, oh, awesome. I like the first one. Let me check out this.
Yeah.
There's no weight of expectance. Like, all right, I got this done. You paid me. You got what you wanted. And then they can come to you and be like, yeah, when are you going to do more? Like, let me, I want more. I like this. And then you can be like, okay, I have ideas for that. And then you build your fan base and stuff like that. Like, see, you have, like, you have the ability to restrain yourself. I don't. Like, right. I'm
at the moment.
Yeah. Like, well, yeah. Once you get them in, it's a whole nother addiction.
Yeah. It might be, you know, it's bad enough, you know, paying for all that. Cause like, I'm doing it regardless whether Kickstarter funds or not. Like, I'm going to have this book out and I'm going to have it at conventions. We're going to have it. So, you know, if it doesn't sell, then I'm not going to have money to do another one. Well, I probably will, but I'll keep working my day job and just pay for another one.
Yeah, there's always ways to do it now. Like it's
right.
I mean, hopefully we don't sell blood, but I mean, I'll do it.
No, I'm not going to go that far. I hate needles.
I hate needles too, but I love comics more.
That's a good
I've gone
point.
Through my head. Like I have like an aversion to needles. Like I can't watch them in movies, but I got to make sure I'm paying my artist for a comic. Take it. Take all the blood.
Take all the blood you get. I have a few fun questions before we get to that real quick. Like, is there anything that we haven't talked about that you want to talk about? We hardly touched on your books.
I could tell you about the comics real
quick. But let's do the book pitch.
All right. So I'll go through them in order as I released them. The first book I came out with was called Sven the Groundhog, Saved from the Stars. Basically, the story came from there was a groundhog in my backyard. I took a picture of it, sent it to my girlfriend, and she was like, what's his name? Because I name all the animals in the backyard. And I was like, it's Sven. Obviously, he's here to save us. And then it kind of clicked into an idea. I was like, that's actually a cool idea. What if he's from space? Whatever. So, like, basically, Sven the Groundhog, he's from space. He's kind of like Howard the Duck mixed with Rocket Raccoon. And the story is kind of mixed with The Thing and Invasion of the Body Snatchers. So on his planet, these evil fungus monsters destroyed his world and invaded everything, took it over, killed all his people, and some of them escaped. And he's coming to our planet to kind of save us from that happening to our planet. So, but he also has to deal with like our government and the Punxsutawney, the guys in Punxsutawney that may or may not be running a groundhog cult. So that's what that story is about, is these evil fungus monsters coming to Earth to try to take over. But he's trying to work with this woman named Sarah to kind of save our world, but also he has to deal with the people in our world that are counterproductive to like his goal. So that's issue one. Issue two gets wild and crazy because you learn my version of how Groundhog Day got started 100 something years ago. And it's not normal. It's weird. No pun intended. But like, so that's Sven number. So Sven number one and an issue number. Sven number one's in already. It's on my website. It's offered on the Kickstarter that I'm running right now. And then Sven number two actually ships me on Wednesday. So I'll have that issue two in on Wednesday. Sweet. And then so the second book I did was Hell of a Job. And that's about these people that work in an office and they find out that the contract they signed actually signed their soul over to hell. So now they have to try to go to hell to renegotiate or they're stuck working at a job they hate for all eternity. It's kind of like The Office mixed with Severance. It's a dark horror comedy. And that, I honestly, who can't relate to that? Who can't relate and be like, these people are the worst? Or like, you know, like you work or you've seen somebody work or for like working for somebody like you work for the devil. And it's like, that's all this really is. And that actually, it came from me like 10 years ago. I read this article about Walmart and they were taking out this insurance on their poor women that lived in bad neighborhoods. And it was called peasants insurance. And because it was more likely that those women would get killed and they would get killed and Walmart would get paid out for it. You can look it up, read it. So like, I was like, holy crap. There's a way that they can own you even after you die. And that's where that seed kind of sat in my head. And then it took me like a decade to kind of build that story. And that's what Hell of a Job is. And that's what issue two is. Issue one's in already. Issue two is running on Kickstarter right now. So that'll run till December 17th. And yes, first issue is 48 pages. Second issue is 36 pages. Third issue is almost done being drawn and colored. It's a wild book. I love all the books, but like I really, that one's easier to write because that one, I like messing with like the corporate ladder and it's descending the corporate ladder and hell has a marketing arm and all this other crazy weird stuff. And then the third book that came out was Anti-Christine and the Four Unicorns of the Apocalypse. Not a mouthful at all. Not weird. So it's about the devil's daughter. When she was 13, she was supposed to be the Antichrist. She was like Damien, but instead she wanted to be a 13-year-old girl and not end the world. So she took the four horsemen, turned them into unicorns, named them after NSYNC and started a rock band. So she rebelled against her devil dad and she ran away from home. And so now she's 27 and the devil had another daughter during that time and she's turning 13 and wants to basically fulfill her dad's wishes. So she has to kill her half sister to end the world. So it's kind of like the TV show Supernatural mixed with like heavy metal and rock and roll. Like it's a wild book issue. Right before we got on this, I was finishing up, I've five more pages of issue two to get drawn. So I was editing those. And then the new series coming out in January, or launching in January, will be called Frosted Up. And it's about this woman who dates a lot of terrible people, and one of these guys winds up kidnapping her daughter. So she teams up with a snowman that she brings to life named Nicholas to get her daughter back. So it's like Frosty the Snowman mixed with Taken. So it's like super crazy and Christmas all at once. Yeah, so that'll be, I'm launching it in January, so there's not going to be a lot of Christmas theme in it, but it's all about snowman, right? The winter and
winter. Yeah.
So like,
still got 2 months of winter left in January.
Yeah. And so it's
winter don't start till my birthday, so December 21st. There you go. But yeah, it's my daughter's unfortunately, like, December's horrible for birthdays. My mom's, everybody's. But my daughter's is the 19th, so, and mine's the 21st. December 19th. So 2 days,
mine was just November 19th.
Oh, there you go.
This cold,
all this cold weather,
holidays,
right?
Christmas, Thanksgiving.
But you and T.S. Luther, do you know who T.S. is? Have you heard of him? You need to follow him on TikTok. He's a very inspirational. He's a new breaking into the scene. Just got picked up by he's doing an Invader Comics is publishing his book. And he does some other ones out there too, but I've had him on a couple times. Once is an interview like this, and I had him crash the episode with me and my daughter, because today is his FOC for his book. But look him up, follow him. He's awesome. He's very similar. I think you guys would get along really well, like bouncing ideas. I'm sure he'd love to talk to you as well. Well, just, the industry and things he's trying to, because that's what he's trying to do, is be a writer for, that's what he does. It's what he wants to do. And that's his job, So, but he does it, his book, The Digger, is like, what if Indiana Jones, hunted Short Round? That's his pitch for his book, right? And like, you just gave a bunch of pitches that also reference movies and books and stuff. Reference, I've got to come up with what mine, I got to come up with a movie reference.
Gotta be quick.
You gotta
set in people's brains exactly what they're getting in for without lying to them and getting them excited, like, I like that. I don't know if I like that, but let's check it out.
I think mine's gonna be Google's going to tell me it's like The Breakfast Club, I think is what they're going to tell me. But I don't know. We'll see. Because it's set in it's like the kid's getting bullied in school, and then he buys the comic that has Panel Pete in him, and then Panel Pete kind of, saves him from the bullies and turns the bullies into his friends. So it's kind of like a coming-to-age story. Children's book, almost.
It's like almost like an imaginary friend. He's not an imaginary friend, but it's kind of like a mixture of, like, was it Drop Dead Fred? And what's the paperclip name from the old Word thing?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, what was the paperclip's name? Somebody else mentioned the paperclip. Somebody said I should bring the paperclip as, like, Panel Pete's friend.
But he's all like,
I don't think Microsoft will let me.
Is it, no one uses paper that, anymore?
Yeah. No, Microsoft probably wouldn't like that too much. But, that's okay. But that's awesome, man. So check out all your books. Go Kickstarter. Find them. I'll have links below whenever we release this in a week or two. Probably next week is my guess. I've been releasing two a week, like three episodes a week the last couple months. So it's been crazy. But yeah, I mean, we started, like, our episode one dropped March 30th. And then I just dropped, I think 68 drops tomorrow.
That's awesome. Well, that's the coolest thing too, is when you see, like, I have two episodes, or I want three episodes, and then all of a sudden, like, I have 68. Where did the time go?
How did I do 68 episodes of editing this year? It's crazy. But I literally dedicate evenings, a couple days a week for recording. It was like one day a week, my daughter and I have to go to the comic shop. We get our books, we come back, we look at them, we record, So it's like 2 to 3 days of evenings of recording, and then, a full day, like Sunday, all day I'm editing, putting reels out and stuff.
It's so much easier to do it when you, like, you care about it and you're excited about it. Like, I appreciate it, and I'm sure everybody that's been on the podcast.
I thank you for that. I appreciate having everybody on that agrees to be on. I mean, that's my goal. I guess you'd say the mission statement is, to be able to provide a platform for creators to, voice what they want to share. And I can't wait. Like, we're still kind of small, but, like, I can't wait for the day that, being on here, like, having a creator on here actually makes a difference in their life too.
I mean, it definitely does.
my North Star.
It definitely does. Because I mean, again, like I just caught videos on there and I'm like, all right, like, so like it you're bringing like content to people that wouldn't normally see it. Like, and right. Then, yeah. So okay. I mean, that's why I appreciate it, because it's like, I know you're going to hit eyes that I'm never going to reach. There's people I'm never going to see. And it's like,
right.
And then they can easily convert into things like people that like my stuff. And like, so, I mean, yeah, I appreciate it. And the thing is, you're already seeing it grow. And it's like, it's a cool feeling to just watch it.
It is. I asked the guy, so I didn't, at first we weren't doing interviews, you know, it was just my daughter and I, something fun to do. And then a guy reached out to me, he's a publicist, and he's like, hey, would you mind doing an interview? Like, I have these guys that need to be on podcasts and stuff. And I was like, I'll try it. I've never done it, you know? And I was so nervous when I did the first one. It was Chris Saloff from Homebrew Comics. You know, I don't know if you know the Homebrew name. Guys.
I don't know. Yeah.
They're awesome. I finally got to meet all four of them in person a couple weeks ago at a convention. That was the coolest thing to me. So he was the first one that I interviewed, right? And then I got to meet him in person. And it went great. And so then I was like, send me more. And then I just started reaching out to people on TikTok and Instagram. Hey, come on, you want to go beyond? It's, you know, never ending. Yeah, you'll love it.
Like, I know I didn't shut up a lot, but I mean, I like talk.
No, that's fine. But I was saying, like, so this guy, I had him on the pod that sent me the first one. I had him on, and I was like, well, how did you find me? Like, I had 10 episodes or 8, 9 episodes out at the moment, at that time. He's like, well, I just came across your clips and I watched a couple of your episodes and you weren't a dick. I was like, oh, okay, thanks. Yeah, imagine that. I think that was one of your pieces of advice. Don't be a dick and, pretty you know, much. You might get somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, be a good person. I mean, crappy people get pretty far too, but like, they can't worry about it. They got to do you. I've been reading that.
You do you.
Reading that Marcus Aurelius book. It's like, there is no past or future. It's like, be the best present you can. That's it.
Exactly. So I have the fun questions we'll do real quick, but before that, we went over your books. Is there anything else we need to talk about? I just want to make sure, like, I always ask this question because I don't want anybody to like hop off and be like, dang, I wish we would have talked about this or whatever.
Yeah,
so
yeah, check out the Kickstarter, Instagram, Facebook, join the Substack. I mean, everything's going to be on there. So even if I miss something here.
Awesome.
And honestly, there's too much I have to say anyway, because like I'm full, my brain's full of nonsense, so like, I'll never get everything out. So like,
all right, awesome. So who was your first favorite superhero or comic character?
That's difficult. I'm gonna say Batman, because as a kid I used to love the '60s Batman show. But as a comic book reader, my first real comic was Green Lantern, and I love Green Lantern. So I bought a 5-pack when I was like 8. At Toys R Us, and I still have those comics, and that got me.
That was my next question: was what your first comic book was?
Yeah, it was like a 5-pack of Green Lantern. It came with like Green Lantern 50, and it was like glow in the dark, like Hal Jordan Parallax, and it got me addicted. Like I was hooked, and like because of Green Lantern too. Like I love that he can make anything with his imagination, and that was like I liked that whole thing. And then I made my first comic book with my grandma, my mama. Because of that stuff.
And really? What was the first comic?
Oh, it was two at the same day. It was two fan books. It was I did a fan Ninja Turtles and then I did a fan Batman. And that was it. And then she wrote the words for me. I told her what to write and I drew all the pictures. And then some reason they both ended in a rainbow doorway. So I don't know if they were just gonna cross the multiverse. I don't know what they're doing. I never made another issue of those stories since then.
Do you still have them?
She might. I think she might have them. I definitely don't have them.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I mean,
that's a cool story.
That is. It's. Yeah, I love my mama, man. She's she's very supportive.
What's your favorite current series
of other people's comics?
You can say your own. I don't care. I mean, like, I don't mind. Like, when mine comes out, it's going to be my favorite.
Even
series.
For me, like I can't even have a favorite because everyone's a baby. So you're just like, I love all these for this because each of them is just a piece of your brain. So like, I mean, even at like comics, I haven't been able to keep up with them weekly anymore. So I've been reading a lot of like paperbacks. My favorite recently has been I never got to read Invincible. I just finally finished Invincible. I think that's one of the best written comic books like out there.
Yeah, I've not gotten to read it. I'm gonna have to start picking it up, just, like the trade.
As a writer who writes comics, you can learn so much from like how he somehow he'll do a page with 11 to 15 panels in it. And you're like, this shouldn't work, and it does work. Things like that. Like, so I read
a comic last night that had a crap ton. I mean, I bet you it was a 2-page spread, but I bet you it had like 20 panels across the two pages.
Absolute Batman just did that. They just did an Absolute Batman with like 22 panels on a page, and I was like, what?
Was that in 14? I haven't read issue 14 yet. Like, so.
Thing is, so if I was reading comics like on a regular basis, I read some Absolute Batman a couple months ago. That was really good. Like, I would love to give more time to it. It's just, again, I don't have time to spend.
I
don't have time or money to spend on other people's comics at the moment. But I've been catching up on reading. So, like, I'll rotate. I'll read a comic book, like a full trade. Then I'll read a novel. And then I'll read a nonfiction book. And then I just rotate those. So, okay. Right now, I'm, like, the last comic I read was The Invincible Compendium 3. And then now I'm reading the Marcus Aurelius book, which is the meditations thing. Or no, then I read The Shining, and then I read Marcus Aurelius. So then it'll rotate. The next comic I'm reading is like Garth Ennis's Punisher. Like, I love Garth Ennis.
Okay. Very cool. If you could live in a comic book universe, which one would you choose?
That one's tough. One where I can jump. Like, I guess something like a Deadpool type thing. So you can jump to other universes. So you're not just trapped into one universe. So it's almost like, I'm going to take this portal and wind up in a Wild West one or a zombie one and things like that. So I don't want to limit myself because why? If I'm in a comic book, I want, like, there's so many stories and so many cool things.
Yeah.
So something where, like, something that breaks the fourth wall, something like a Deadpool, or even, like, when I worked at Zenoscope to plug myself, like, there's a Cinderella book, and it's one of my favorite books I've ever written. It's basically Cinderella mixed with Harley Quinn and Deadpool. And she's just like, she's the villain, but she just kills people, but like goes to different worlds. And she's very like immature.
What's the name of that one?
It gives me options.
What's the name of that one?
That one's called Cinderella. And then the first one was called Cinderella Serial Killer Princess. But then they have an omnibus right now. It's called Cinderella, the Fairy Friends Edition. It's like blood and. I have it in my thing. I forgot what I named it. It's like Blood and Fairy Friends.
Blood and Fairy Friends? I'm going to have to look at those. My daughter would love those. She's a huge Harley Quinn fan.
So. Cinderella's, she's one of the most fun I've ever had writing. It's just.
And I like reading. I've been trying to read some Grimm Fairy Tale stuff, but it's hard for me to get it. Like, my shop doesn't get Zenoscope.
Well, I don't think they have a distributor right now. Like, they don't have a U.S. distribution. They've been distributing directly through themselves. Like, I'm still friends with everybody there.
I thought they were with Philbo Distribution.
They were with him at one point, and I know they're with. I'm not sure. I haven't kept up that much. Like, I just still talk to people there every now and then. But they have another one that's only in Canada, and it might move to U.S. in the new year. It's the one that bought a bunch of the diamond stuff. I forget what they're called.
I don't know.
But it's a Canadian-based one only now, and I know they're with them. And then I think that distributor is becoming U.S.-based in, like, January.
Okay.
Early planning. So.
Yeah, I know most of my comic shop gets from, like, Lunar, and I think. Maybe one other one. Yeah, the whole diamond thing is a whole crazy mess.
That's a whole.
That's a whole nother episode.
It's not finished yet. That's the crazy thing. It's like it's still going.
It's still ongoing.
Every month is like something new, and I'm like, whatever.
Right. If you could have any superpower, which would you choose?
I'd say super speed. Yeah, super speed. So I can go anywhere in the world I want. You run quick enough, maybe you go back in time. You can get anything done. I can write and then still go hang out. Things like that.
There you go.
Not enough time in the
world. That's awesome. Right. Which comic book character, any character, would you have as your sidekick?
I don't know. That's a tough one. I would say Spider-Man because I like his wit, but he's nothing but bad luck. So I don't really want to. I don't feel like getting mauled or injured permanently
every day.
So I mean, maybe you just That's tough. I'd say Green Lantern, just because we can go to different planets and things like that and check stuff out.
Ooh, that'd be cool.
Drink some space beer.
All right, last one. If your life were a comic book, what would the title be?
Weird Brain Entertainment.
There you literally, go. Yeah. Hey.
I mean, that's all it
literally
is. The whole name of the company, the logo, it's from my weird brain to your hands. That's it.
I love that.
And a little piece of me is in every one of those things. So it's like every character you write kind of has a little piece of your thoughts in there. I mean, they might be twisted and more dark and you don't really agree with all of them, but like, it's just, I don't know. Everything's a little piece of you.
I love that. Well, this has been awesome, man. I really appreciate you being on. I've learned a lot in this episode.
thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate great. You giving me the time and giving me your time and like a chance to meet new people.
Yeah, we'll get those videos going together, you know, with our faces on it.
Yeah.
And we'll hopefully get to meet at some conventions. Philly's only like 6-7 hours away, it's not
far.
Should
be doing that one. I mean, I hope I should be able to do that one again this year. Like, that's a really good show.
Awesome.
Yeah, but I mean, definitely. I hope we do get to run into each other. Like, I love to meet you in person.
Yeah, that'd be awesome, man. Well, thanks so much. Everybody go look at the Kickstarter. I'll have links in the description below. I'll do a blog post on Substack. Subscribe to both of our Substacks. It's free to subscribe. You don't have to pay for anything there just to get some cool info. I started doing blog posts for every episode now. So
that's cool. Behind the scenes.
Yeah, doing a little bit of that. I'm trying.
Yeah, I'll link this and I'll put that in my thing too, so I can reach out.
Like, perfect. Yeah. No. So when I do release the episode, I'll send you an email with a link because it'll be on YouTube. Video will be on YouTube, and then like audio will be anywhere you get a podcast. So, but I'll tag. I guess you can tag people in Substack.
I don't really know.
We'll learn. I'll put a note here. Tag in Substack. I'll figure it out, but I'm trying to do that. I like Substack so far because it's really because I've needed a place to do blog posts and I've needed a newsletter. So I can knock both of those out in there. Don't know if you can sell stuff in there yet. I don't know how that works, but we'll figure it out.
Supposed to? They want to, basically, I think the sales, because they want to make money. If you're making money, they want to make money with you.
Gotcha. So it's part of the subscription stuff.
Yeah. So like, right. I don't ever like put sales in there. It's just more like, hey, check out my website. Check out these things. I'm going to be at these places. Check out this Kickstarter because this is all part of my life and my blog. So no branding one day, but like, we'll see.
Hopefully not. Schedule. Yeah, I love that. Well, cool, man. Everybody, check it out. Like, follow, subscribe, all that fun stuff. And we'll catch you next time. All
right, thank you again. Thanks, guys.
In a world of heroes, villains, and epic stories,
Braha, Onicon, and their ultimate sidekick, Panel Pete, take you on adventures each week.
Showing off their comic book hauls,
fun trivia and games, honest reviews,
and inspiring conversations with the creators and consumers who make it all possible.
Join in on the conversation.
This is Talking Comics.
Trying to start a podcast but feeling stuck? At Aquatio, we help creators make waves with everything you need to bring your voice to life. Hosting, recording, editing, and marketing. Whether you're starting from scratch or just need a little help polishing your sound, we're here to hydropower your creativity. Comment on this video or DM us today and let's dive in.